The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, at some stage or other, each of us has had our attention drawn to wild birds, whether looking at a cheeky robin in the garden or feeding the swans of the local pond or catching sight of a raven while hiking in our uplands, or perhaps a hovering hawk searching for its prey. With the right know-how, birdwatching can become a wonderful lifetime hobby, and my next two guests are the best advocates for it. To discuss the second edition of Birds of Ireland, I'm delighted to be joined by Jim Wilson and Mark Harmody. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Now, let's talk, Jim, first of all, a second edition. One would not imagine that the birds have changed too much. So,
well, thankfully, Pat, their outward appearance hasn't changed in 11 years since we had the first edition brought out. But yeah, lots of things have changed. Technology, even like the fact that we've now got apps for people to use, things like that. Also, unfortunately, the fortunes of some of our birds haven't gone too well and are on decline. And but there are then some that are doing okay. What's happening with climate change is we're seeing more and more species that would normally be seen in southern Europe are now starting to turn up regularly on our shores.
What sort of birds are turning up that we might not have expected?
Well, the most obvious ones now are the cousins of the little egret. As people who are out and about would now be familiar with the little egret, which really was one of the pioneers of the climate change movers to the north. And they started turning up irregularly from the mid-1970s onwards. But now we have their bigger cousins, the great white egret, which is as big as our own greyhound, a very striking bird. And they're now regularly becoming, frequent visitors to the South Shores. And the cattle egret, which is one people, a lot of people wouldn't know the name of it, but they would have seen them if they've watched any documentaries where elephants are out on the savannah and you see these little white birds following, eating what they disturb as they walk. And they are now turning up in Ireland as well.
And they're not going to Dublin Zoo.
You'd never know, but they haven't been spotted there yet anyway.
Now, Mark, the imagery and the possibility of imagery has changed dramatically since the first edition.
It has, but I think the technology behind the cameras has improved significantly just in terms of being able to track birds in flight. For example, where previously when we did the first edition 11 years ago, getting birds in flight took a lot more skill, I would say, to try and capture them. But the smaller birds in particular were very, very difficult because the speed of the camera focusing systems weren't there. But now in the last maybe 3-4 years, you're seeing the kind of AI tracking systems on these cameras that are, allow you to lock onto a small bird in flight, and you're able to capture the image with easier, I would say.
Easier, still easier. Difficult, I would suspect.
Course, yeah.
But the kind of camera that you use now, obviously a digital camera where before it might have been a film, and all this wizardry, the AI wizardry, so you lock on almost like a missile.
It's actually just like that. You have the camera set up and programmed to track kind of small or track subjects in the center of the frame, for example. And as soon as the tracking system locks onto that small bird or even a large bird, it just holds focus. And
okay, but do you have to move it, or is it on a tripod and it'll actually? I mean, it's the little motor that'll turn the camera to keep.
No, it's my eye still, and my shoulders moving, or I'm moving the tripod, or moving the camera on a tripod to track the bird itself. It's just the actual focus of the lens internally within the camera is AI driven.
Now, one of the aspects of bird watching is where you might find a bird, or where you're likely to find a bird, and that's where the maps come in about the diminishing presence of certain birds in certain areas.
Yeah, absolutely. We, after the first edition came out, we kept a close eye on reviews, like on, you know, online and in the media, printed media and that. And the distribution maps, people wanted maps. I think a lot of them were people who were coming to Ireland and they thought this would be a good book to have. And so we decided we'd do the maps. So luckily we've been out mapping birds along with our hundreds of our colleagues all over Ireland for many, many years. And so we drew on those maps. And when you look at the maps from like even 1967, when we did the very first map, to now, I mean, if you look at, I think we put the example in there of the corncrake, and it's like, yeah. Oh my God. It's when you see the two maps side by side, you can really, really see that, yes, there is something really yeah. dramatic happening now, here.
Is this all to do with hedgerows?
For corncrakes, it's more that we moved from less intensive, extensive farming to intensive, very intensive farming.
Where does the corncrake live? I mean, where does it hide?
It loves meadows. Meadows, ideally, but hay meadows, like in the old days,
yeah.
which you would have, harvested and cut with a horse or something very yeah. slow. But once the tractor came in, it all happened really quick. And yeah. then also we went from hay meadows to silage. And with silage, you're cutting it 3 or 4 times a year. Yeah. It's more of a monoculture. You wouldn't
so
have...
So therefore the breeding cycle is
yeah,
disrupted
it's, completely. It's disrupted. They can't get out in time.
If it hadn't happened as quickly with yeah. the mechanization of yeah. farming, would the corncrake, from your experience of other birds, would yeah. it have adapted and found a different kind of way of living?
It probably not, because, I mean, one has to admit that, we often talk that we are the custodians of the landscape as a group, and farmers in particular. But we're not really. We're actually architects of the landscape. We have changed it so much since the very first people started farming, where, because before then it was forestry. The squirrel yeah. could go from Mizenhead to Malinhead without touching the ground. So since then, we've been changing the landscape, and there's been winners and losers in nature, and the birds are no exception. So once farmers started clearing for cattle and for grazing and even for crops, well, birds like the corncrake, this yeah. habitat was heaven.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
their numbers did well there. And then, of course, the holiday period came to an end once intensification and mechanization came in. And now they're struggling to find open meadows. There would have been natural meadows, but there wouldn't have been so much.
Now, when you look at endangered species, mm-hmm. a so-called red list, mm-hmm. a bird like the quail?
Yeah. Quail, even the kestrel is on it. The meadow pipit is on it. Like, Mark now, because he's from Cove, like he's my nephew, but he's living in Dublin, and he would regularly go up and down from...
up and down the motorway. So I moved to Dublin in 2008, and if you travel from Cork to Dublin on the old road and the new motorway, you might have seen a dozen to 20 kestrels hovering over the motorway.
Okay.
Now, 2 or 3 in the same journey is all you'd see. So there's a marked decline, and that's quite visible. It's quite noticeable.
Is any species of bird doing well besides the Grafton Street seagull, which is prospering?
Yes.
Well, I think kind of to counter the kestrel on the same stretch of motorway back in 2008, the buzzard would have been quite rare. It wouldn't have been yeah. quite common. Now you'd see 20 buzzards or 30 buzzards on your
now
journey.
How are they doing well?
They're doing well because they have a niche. They take rats and rodents and rabbits and roadkill as well. So they're kind of the cleaners of the countryside. And they were numerous birds up to 200 years ago, but then with persecution, they declined and they were extinct as a breeding species in Ireland in the early 20th century. But now they're recovering just due to the fact that persecution has stopped and the use of pesticides has gone down.
Now, do we have to accept this ebb and flow of species?
I think so. I think it's just part and parcel of mm-hmm. where we are and the environment we live in.
Yeah.
And we all partake in it, and we all give and we all take. And I think the ebb and flow of species coming and going is...
How versatile are birds in terms of what they find? I mean, a mm-hmm. nesting swallow, for example, might mm-hmm. go to the same place every year. Mm-hmm. And how they convey that to the chicken and the egg, that, by the way, baby, this is where you...
Yeah.
You fetch up, but they do somehow. But suppose they arrive and that's been demolished, or
yeah.
there's a block of flats where there
yeah.
used to be
yeah.
an old church where yeah. they nested. What happens?
They can't nest. That's the end of
but
it.
But do they find another place? Or do they give up?
For the numbers, probably not. Or the competition for suitable areas. It would be a bit like, when people go house hunting. You know,
yeah.
if there's only one new housing estate in the whole place, there's this ferocious competition for it, and it's harder to get it. And it's the same with the birds, that if you take away all that habitat, all that suitable habitat, it puts pressure on each individual bird, and they won't adapt that easily. The generalists will, like Things like the crow,
the
crow,
magpie.
Yeah, the crow family. They because they're generalists and scavengers, you know, they're not picky when they go to the restaurant. They'll eat whatever's put in front of them. Whereas something like a swallow only eats insects and only breeds where it can build a nest in a ledge in that. Whereas, like, you know, you get magpies, and for example, there was one recorded recently, and you know these little spikes that they put on the top of statues and places where they don't want the pigeons to go? It built its nest out of those. So it did all the pigeons a favour. But like, it showed how it was intuitively able to change. But for species who have put all, pardon the pun, in one sense, all their eggs in one basket, be it by feeding or their nesting habitats, they're the ones who can't adapt quickly enough.
Wasn't it La Gaza Ladra, the thieving magpie, ever thus?
Yeah.
Clever bird.
Yeah, clever
bird. And
yet bird.
With a very bad reputation.
Yeah, unfortunately, which is not at all, I don't think it's deserved, because I think unfortunately our poor Moggy the cat is a miles ahead as one that does far more damage to our bird life and small little cute brown birds than a magpie could ever do.
Some of the questions. I've noticed birds starting to sing at 3:45. I think it's the blue light LED bulbs in our streetlights. Has any research been done into this? That's my...
I think at this time of year, birds are going to start singing earlier as well. Certain species will sing through the night in winter, like the robin, and so streetlights will confuse the robin and they think, well, it's daytime, I get up and I'll start singing to let everyone know I'm here. So I'm not too sure about that, but I think just with the dawn chorus starting to kick
like
in.
The amber light may not have confused the bird, but that white light, that bluish white light may.
It may do. And I mean, there's been lots of studies recently. Even insects are going to suffer really badly with the new LED lights, because it totally confuses them. And it's quite possible that it could be that too for these birds when they're especially that early. But as Mark said, you know, they're on a bell curve like we are, Pat. People seem to think because they all look the same that they all do the same thing. But there's crazy ones that will start singing early. Okay. There's always one or two. They don't all sing at that time of the day.
Another question. Can you ask what effect avian bird flu has on the wild bird population?
It's been unbelievable, both nationally and globally. Particularly the seabirds have been hammered, because seabirds, they all nest together closely. And a lot of them are cousins, by the way. They come back to where they were born to breed. Yeah. So the gene pool is not vast. So if they're susceptible to something like the bird flu, if one gets it, they all get it.
They all get it.
And they're wiped out. Whole colonies have been decimated.
But I presume there are some survivors in those
colonies.
There are.
And thankfully, it appears as if that wave has passed for now. Okay. And so this year, we're hoping birds can bounce back.
Of course, because there's more food for the few.
Exactly.
So then they can breed successfully.
Exactly. The problem is if it happens 4 or 5 years in a row, then they're in serious trouble.
It's a beautiful book. It's produced by Gill Books, and it's a handbook size. It's not quite the size of a fiction paperback. It'll fit in your pocket.
That's the whole idea. We want you to be able to bring it with you, put it in your rucksack or your day bag or your big pocket, in the car, in the glove compartment. It's something you can have with you all the time.
And it's not just marked for the specialist. I mean, I can use this and I can identify the species in my garden, the species on the roof of Marconi House.
Absolutely, Pat. It's for beginners and improvers and people who want to begin birdwatching, I guess, and to familiarise themselves with the birds that they would more than likely see on their walk in the park or looking out their kitchen window or even on their trips around the country. So it's one for everybody, really.
It contains details of more than 260 species, 1,600 photographs. Absolutely brilliant. I don't have a price. How much is it?
17, 18 euro, I think.
And good value at that. That's for sure, for sure.
We tried to keep the price down so everybody could have it.
It might be a while before edition number 3.
we live in hope.
All right. Thank you both. Birds of Ireland, a field guide, second edition, produced by Jim Wilson with photographs by Mark Carmody. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.